Hey, and welcome to the Ken Thompson Live Show. I am the son, Eric Payne, Eric Citizen Payne, to those of you out there on the internet and all those sites. And it is 8 p.m. on the East Coast. This is the K. Thompson Live Show. And I'm the son, and you are.
I am K. Thompson Live, and I'm live. And we have an exciting show for you tonight. We have a lot of things to talk about. There's so many things happening downtown New York and in the metropolitan area of New York and New Jersey. We are expecting to talk to Adrian Council and Gene Nash, and they are with the Positive Community Magazine, which is a magazine that has been in existence for a long period of time, ever since we were broadcasting from New Jersey PAC. There's going to be an event that Adrian Council is going to be calling in, you know, to come on and talk to us about. Also, our other co-host is Wayne Gilman, and I know that Wayne is probably standing by also, so Wayne, you know, we'll get back to you in a minute. And another thing, we see Dominic Carter, you know, journalist, you know, used to be with the WLIB, covering all those stories in the early part of LIBBLS. So we have a lot to talk about tonight, and a lot of things going on in different parts of New Jersey. The metropolitan area of New York, New Jersey is really, you know, really coming alive here, especially downtown Newark, everyone.
Okay. We have a lot of events that are going to be going on. There's one that I believe Adrian Council of Positive Communications is going to be coming on and talking to us about. Takes place on the 17th of November. And it appears that it is an awards show, awards evening, and there's a gala that they're going to be having there at the
New Jersey Performing Arts Center.
Right. I'm talking about Positive Community,
yes, at New Jersey Performing Arts Center. That's what it's going to be.
Right, right. Oh, okay. And it's, as my mother just said, it's going to be at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center. It is a Positive Community Awards Gala, and it's going to be their 15th anniversary. And we want to talk about who's going to be there and some of the people there.
Yeah, and what's happening is that it's a special posthumous.
Posthumous. It's actually is going to be a special evening where they're going to be honoring outstanding individuals for their exceptional community service.
And one of the people that they're going to be honoring is an award to Amiri Baraka. And, of course, I think that's going to be, you know, accepted by, you know, his son, the mayor of Newark, and the mayor of Newark, Mayor Ras Baraka. So he's going to be there. And let me see. The other honorees are Dr. Ursula Daniels and Lowell Hawthorne and Terry Williams, and it's presented by Prudential. So this is going to be also November 17th, downtown New York. A lot of things are going down on downtown New York, you know, so many new things. Especially, you know, we want to talk about, just mention, you know, Bonner's restaurant, Duke's Southern Food. So that was a fantastic, you know, event when she opened up her restaurant with the jazz and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And we are scheduling now, you know, a couple of dates down there to do the show from there. So how do you like that idea?
Well, that's great. That's great. As my mother said, there's going to be those things are going on. And the city of Newark really is bustling. I actually happened to be there last night at the Go GI Fund. The GoGI Fund is a veterans group that honors veterans. And I went there last night with Congressman Donald Payne. I'm pretty sure it's called the GoGI Fund. And they honor veterans, and they raise a lot of money to help the cause of veterans. Was initially started by three young men who lost one of their buddies in Iraq. And this was a way to honor him and his memory and his service to the country, and it's just an event that they have, and it's a very positive group, and it was quite an event last night where they honored people who were special, contributed a lot of things to the community in honor of veterans and things like that.
And what's happening is that our positive community, the magazine, people in the magazine, Gene Nash and Adrian Council, what they're doing is they're having this award and gala.
Let me just let me just get this out.
Uh-huh.
These are two separate events. The event that I'm talking about, those last night, is a separate organization, separate event from the event that we're going to be talking to Adrian Council about. Let's focus on that right now. And we're talking about that. And that was just in the vein that you were talking about, a lot of things going on in the city of Newark. That's one of the things. So that's one of the events that was happening last night, as well as the Devil's Game. So the downtown Newark seems like it's bustling a little bit. They're doing a lot of building, and a lot of big buildings going up. But hopefully it's a resurgence in the community, that can branch out to other parts of the community where the residents of Newark, as well as everybody else coming into Newark that happens to work there that might not live within the boundaries of the city, but hopefully certainly the residents that can also enjoy in the rejuvenation of the city of Newark.
Yeah, we are waiting to hear from Wayne Gilman, Adrian Council, and Dominic Carter. If you are there, please say something. And, you can come on the air and give us some more information.
Well, yeah, while we're waiting for our guests, let's talk about some of the issues. We'll talk about today. The president, was able to strike a deal with China in terms of helping them to reduce some of their emissions. And I'm noticing that we do have our third co-host on that's joining us, Mr. Wayne Gilman. How are you,
that's
Wayne?
That's right. Good evening, Eric and Kay. How are you? Can you hear me now?
Yes, very clearly. Very clearly.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm a little late. I just ran back from a reception here in Lower Westchester County. This has just been a very, very busy day. And I don't know, it just seems like old home week. I mean, Kay, you and I, we talk regularly, but you're going to have Adrian and Dominic on tonight. I just got off the phone with Mark Riley, and I was talking to Lenny Morris and a few other people today. You know, I guess, I don't know, it has anything to do with the full moon waning or what have you, but it just seems like everyone is in contact with one another of late. All good things, I hope, you know, and that's about it.
We're doing some very interesting things. A lot of things going on downtown Newark and in the state of New Jersey and in the whole political arena. So we are going to be keeping people up to date about what's going on in Congress, you know, because of the work that we have done with Congressman Payne.
Right. The new regime, so to speak, that's going to be taking over in January, unfortunately. So we'll see if they really decide to govern. But before we jump off into that, Wayne, did you happen to be downtown in Manhattan today where you saw the guys hanging off the skyscraper?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been hearing that story all afternoon long. I tell you, you know, that is one job in addition to pushing a cab that I will not do. I used to push a cab at one time in my life, and I vowed never to go back to that. You know, I will sell myself first before I would do something like that again. But I am amazed.
Let me stop you right there, buddy. When you say pushing, you mean driving, right? That's cabbie lingo, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was a hack. Yeah, I forgot that you would not be familiar with things like that, Eric Payne. But when I was in school trying to coming up, I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Wait,
you know, you jumped into the cabbie lingo. You're like you're back on the job. So for those of us lay people, I just wanted to make sure that you weren't literally put. You know, my mind went to literal. I was like, why would he be pushing a cab? But then,
Yeah, well, I'm glad. Forgive me. You know, that's a sign of my old age, you know, and early senility or what have you. But the thing is that was cabbie lingo at the time you pushed the cab. You know, you hacked for a living. And, you know, it was once a noble profession in New York, and it seems to be coming back in some circles. But the time I did it was rather dangerous. And, ironically, had I not got into the cab business, I probably would not have been in radio at all, because I had met the news director of an all-news station on the very last day on the job. I was stabbed. So just one of those things. I figured it might have been a better way. Come again?
You were what? You said stabbed?
I was stabbed in the back. Yeah. I know I used to tell this story on the air from time to time when I was in the city. But, ironically, I was a student at Queens College a day, and I would push a cab from 4 to midnight at night to make ends meet. And I did it for a couple of months. And ironically, earlier, the very last day that I had worked, I met the news director of 1010 Winds, Hank Schnell. I don't even know if Hank is still around. But I had driven him from one section of Manhattan to where the station was at the time, ironically on Park Avenue. It was at 90 Park Avenue. Winds has moved since then. It's part of CBS now, but Westinghouse owned it. And, and I got into a conversation, told him of my interest to write. And, he gave me his card. I gave him my name. And, I had no desire to go on the air. I just wanted to write. I knew that they had people behind the scenes doing, entry-level work. And I was, eager to find out more about it. And about 4 or 5 hours later, while I was out there trying to, make a living, I picked up someone, the least suspecting individual, from Wall Street in a three-piece Brooks Brothers suit, attaché case, and I dropped him off at the Port Authority. He handed me a $100 bill, okay, this is before they had petitions between the back seat and the front seat.
Yeah.
And I said I didn't have change for $100. So I said, leave your briefcase, and I will have you go out and see if you can make change. And he said, oh, no, expletive, N-word deleted, stabbed me in the shoulder blade and sped off into the darkness at Port Authority. I was taken to St. Luke's Hospital, and about a week later I said, there's got to be a better way to pay for my tuition. And I called that guy Hank Schnowy, and he gave me a shot at doing a writer's audition, and I started working 1-2 days a week. Before you know it, I was making more money writing once a week, putting out the news as opposed to doing what I was doing, trying to scuffle in the streets of New York, and grateful to just get off, period. And that's where it all began.
Yeah,
you know?
That's the first time I've heard that story, Wayne.
I had repeated it, I'd actually discussed this, at times from time to time. I forgot with whom now, but, I'm just glad to have gotten away from that. And I just, when I look back at everything now, especially people, because the whole purpose of discussing this is what happened to these two gentlemen on the scaffolding today. I mean, there are a lot of dangerous jobs out here in New York, and there's some people who are very suited. I don't know if it's because I don't want to sound ethnic, but I do know that there's some particular groups that have a propensity to dealing with heights a lot easier than maybe the average person. And I don't know, they're inclined to find work like that, or maybe they just, will risk anything.
That's the brakes hitting, that's the brakes screeching. Because I just want to make sure I heard what you just said. You said, I don't want to sound, racist. Racial?
Yeah.
But.
Well, I mean, I hate to say it, but I've heard this. I'll come out and I've heard that. I'm getting feedback.
Are you talking about the American Indians when they were?
Actually, I was thinking of Indians from Central America. I understand that they can handle heights. A great deal. I never even thought about Native Americans.
That's right. They were Native Americans. All right? They were from upstate New York. Because I got to interview some of them. Remember, we also interviewed the Lakotas? Pat Atwell.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm certain Bill Katz would bear me out on this, but I always thought that the Aztec Indians in Central America, Mexico, and places like that, they were skillful at handling, you know, jobs that would require you to go up 70 flights, you know, in scaffolding. But it's still scary. You know, when you see something malfunction like that, you have to be holding your heart in your hand and praying every minute that somebody's going to be at least witnessing what you're going through and coming to your rescue. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean,
What about the guys back in the, all the guys that built the skyscrapers in New York? Those weren't, a lot of those were Europeans that came over there, weren't they?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, I mean, every group, and again, I don't want to sound, you know, biased, but everybody's made a contribution. You know, black folks were largely responsible for the construction and the layout of Washington, D.C. We had Lewis Latimer with the lighting system here in New York. I mean, a lot of that is kept under wraps, you know. You know, the Italians are great at being bricklayers. I mean, with a lot of the cobblestone work, you know, I admire what they've done. You know, the Irish built the railroads. You know, I mean, everybody's made a contribution. And forgive me if I sounded in the least bit, I need to wake. It's just so much has been going on. But the deal is that I didn't want to sound like as if I was being disparaging in any way, but I do recall that, you know, the Indian populace, the Aztec Indian populace of Central America and Native Americans were, you know, very skillful in handling heights like that. And ironically, not many of them were responsible for the construction of skyscrapers in cities like New York, Chicago. Yes. So you're absolutely right, Eric.
Wait,
you know.
Let's get into something else. What do you think about Loretta Lynch? You know, the lady that...
I think that was a great move. I've heard nothing but good things about her. And I think that... certainly, this is someone that could easily segue into that position, and after the absence or soon-to-be departure of Eric Holder, I think Obama is going to have probably a little bit of a scuttlebutt from the sudden change in the Congress, but it's his last term. You know, he's got nothing to lose. He has nothing to answer to. And it just seems to point the American voting populace has already given their response to how they feel about Obama. And I just think it's so unfortunate. I really do. And I think that no matter, you know, what monies we may put together to fight that element out there that would rather not acknowledge the great work this president has done, I would like to see the party of influence right now, the one that is holding the seat in the White House, do something to basically promote what it is that this man has done, because changes are in the offing and they're happening quickly. I was at a meeting today in a realtor's office, and I come to find out a lot of these programs, and I'm not surprised in the least bit, but, you know, some of the programs to help people who are trying to hold on to their homes, that the government is beginning to scrap them. The banks are not lending the way they used to. So the tide is turning slowly. Even though there are a lot of people working, the salaries haven't gotten any better, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Conditions are... you know, a little better. I mean, he's anesthetized some of the strife that we were going through economically. But,
yeah.
I fear what's going to happen with the banks once there's a change in the administration, particularly if it goes back being the other way.
Yeah, I want to say something right now. If Adrian Council is on the line, if you're there, Adrian, you know, say hello. And also, Dominic Carter. And Dominic, if you're there, we're going to be talking about Dominic about a few things, you know? also, keeping up with purchasing. You know, we want to find out what is going to be happening with that, because there, some sort of results should be coming down now. Is that it?
Yeah, pretty soon. I understand that they're really trying to keep the tension down. That's the last thing I heard, but I hadn't really been focused on you know what efforts are going to be made with regard to resolving this issue. I mean, once he's brought to trial and or at least once the grand jury gets hold of it and they formally charge, they don't want everyone renewing some of the same protest activities that led to weeks of uneasiness and unrest in that town. You know, there's a situation where they really would like to keep the process as quiet as possible until they have adequate control of the environment there. I remember reading about that, and that's about the extent of it. But, you know, it's just unfortunate that we're still dealing with situations like that, and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
Yeah, that Wayne, it sounds like to me, when they say we want to make sure that we have the right crowd control, we want to make sure that we have all the systems in place in case there's some unrest, that sounds to me like the fix is in. You know, like they're anticipating that the grand jury, that they might even already know the results, probably, that the grand jury is the grand jury. I'm sorry, folks. You probably hear my mom on the phone in the background calling these folks.
Can I interrupt for 1 minute?
Sure.
We got to Adrian, and he's going to be calling in.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're probably going to be putting the fix in. Is my point.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, they're already talking about, Eric, mobilizing the National Guard in that area in the event the decision is not what most people want to hear. So it sounds almost foregone that the decision is not going to be something that the average person who's been out there protesting would want to hear. But this is standard procedure with most law enforcement offices around the country. I mean, there is that consistency about law enforcement that usually it's the 48-hour rule like we have here in New York. In this case in Ferguson, you know, there was outrage. There was an eruption of protest. The protests will continue, and I'm pretty certain that you know, it's pretty foregone that the outcome is not going to be something favorable, and they're going to want to see that this guy, whether he's indicted or not, will be able to, retain his employment with the police department there, you know.
Yeah, I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that the police law enforcement out there appears to be corrupt in Ferguson, to me. The city council appears to be corrupt. And they seem to be in cahoots with letting this guy get off with murder.
Sure.
The only reason that you would come out and say, "Well, we're going to have all these things in place in case," is because it sounds like to me they already know it. And like I said, the sixth. And we are just before you with Bob Wayne. Let me just say we're joined by another caller here. And I assume it's the caller that my mom just called that you might have heard if you're listening to the show. And go ahead, sir. Your mic is open. You're on the air with us. Tell us who you are.
My name is Adrian Council. I'm with my partner, Gene Nash Wells, my business partner, Gene Nash Wells, and we are the publishers of the Positive Community Magazine.
Now, Mr. Council, my name is Eric Payne. We're the co-hosts on the show, along with my mother, Kay Thompson, and Mr. Wayne Gilman. Hello to you and
Wayne.
Good evening. Good evening, Adrian. Good evening,
it's
Gene.
It's been a long time.
It really has been, and I've been hearing great things about you guys, you know?
Yeah. Well, Gene and I are in our 15th year of publishing a magazine that we began in 2000. Called the Positive Community Magazine. And I should also say, Eric, that certainly one of the people that were that was an inspiration to us and an encourager of us is your mother, Kay Thompson.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she's quite encouraging. As I'm sure you found over the years.
Yes, and, we're just happy. We're actually right now working on the next issue of the magazine. So we are here burning the midnight oils, but we're certainly enjoying the programming and we're listening about what's going on in Ferguson. And so we're just glad to be with you tonight.
Adrian, where's Jean? Jean, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great, Kay. How are you?
Fine, great. You know, we'll be seeing you on the 17th.
Oh, yeah.
Tell everybody what's going on now.
Well, we are celebrating, as Adrian said, our 15th anniversary, and we are doing a special event. Invitation only event at NJPAC. We are mounting our first annual Positive Community Awards and Gala.
Wow.
And we are honoring several people. We have Positive Community Awards, which we chose the people who we felt, have contributed so much to our communities in the areas that we cover, which are health, education, business, and community service space. And then in addition to that, we ran an online competition, I guess you would say, that where we asked people to nominate the community in those different areas, health, business, and education, and then they were voted for online. And we have those three award winners for that as well. And we're very excited about the fact that we are inaugurating the Gus Henningberg Award for Excellence in Community Service. And that award this year is being given posthumously to Mary Baraka and the mayor of Newark. His son, Raz Baraka, is going to accept that award. So we're very excited about that. And that's our highest award, and that will always continue to be our highest award. And certainly you know how much Gus meant to us over the years.
Yeah.
Now,
so we think, we're just really excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is
a great old time.
Now, this is the first time, these are going to be the first awards which you'll make annually from now on in, is that correct?
That's correct, yep. So we'll always have choice awards where we'll ask the public to choose people that they believe are worthy of getting an award for their community service, in addition to whatever they do in their, in their work lives or whatever, if they're doing something additional to help benefit the community. That's what we want to celebrate.
And we see that some of the honorees are Dr. Ursula Daniels, Lowell Hawthorne, Terry M. Williams, United Missionary Baptist Association of New York, Reverend Dr. Paul L. Washington are your honorees.
In that case,
people.
We're honoring the association, and he is the moderator of that. He is the head of that association, so he's accepting the award. But that association has over 100 churches. I think I've heard the term. I think I've heard the term 147 churches in the New York area that they represent and fellowship with. And then the business award is going to Golden Crust Caribbean Bakeries. And, Kay, I know you remember them from the days at Inner City Broadcasting when they were just
my favorite bakery, by the way.
Yeah, Yeah, selling meat patties out of the back of a truck.
Okay. Yeah.
Now they're national and international. I think they have over, I know they have over 35 franchises throughout the country.
More
than that.
Yes, it's over 200 by now.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Actually, it is the, according to Black Enterprise, Golden Crust Caribbean Bakeries is the number one black-owned business in the New York metropolitan area, New York, New Jersey metropolitan area.
Yeah.
And,
so that's a big one.
They started selling out of the truck.
Go ahead.
They started selling out of the truck, is that correct?
Well,
no, that's how they started.
They started with one bakery on Gun Hill Road in a mobile truck.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was the sales manager at the radio station, we were doing a tailgate party for the Urban League Classic, and he came in. He only had $500, but he wanted to put his truck out there and sell beef patties at the Meadowlands, and the rest is history. So we're glad, and one of the things about Golden Cross Caribbean Bakeries is that they're a faith-based business. I've been to several of their grand openings. They get into a prayer circle, and it just
faith and family. Many of the good many of the employees are family members, from children, you know, wife and children and sisters and brothers, and you know that it's a family-owned business, and they work together, and they pray together, and they prosper together.
That's for sure. Well, that certainly is fantastic. Now, let me ask you, and Wayne, get in here if you have some questions, but let me ask you both, I don't know, but I've never asked this question, certainly other both of you, why did you guys feel the need to start Positive Community Magazine all those years ago?
Well, we, both Gene and I, are media, black consumer marketing specialists, and we've actually, in over the years, we saw that the church, one of the biggest institutions in our community outside of the family, but, you know, in this media-dominated society, this is an institution that also needs a voice and a contemporary vision. So what we've done is nurtured our relationships with our advertisers and particularly the retail advertisers in our community that know where the best of our community can be found on Sundays in church.
But more than that too, it's not only church, it's community.
Right.
Because we felt that all of the good things that were happening in our community, the everyday people who are working hard to, you know, have their children to be successful and, you know, just going to work and living life like everyone else, nobody knows about them. And so our niche is really that we feature, for the most part, everyday people who are doing extraordinary things. And many of those people, you know, generate from the church.
I hate to interrupt, but I think I know a little bit about the news business, and I was just wondering, I just wanted to ask both Gene and Adrian, given the economic downturn in this country, has it been extremely difficult to keep a publication like yours alive in the last 10 to 15 years, particularly what happened from like 2007 forward?
Yes, it has been. But, you know, through God's grace and mercy, we're still here. It's been difficult. We've put everything back into the business to keep it going. We're not millionaires by any means. So, you know, we're hoping that one day that'll happen. But right now, our advertisers know where they can reach the people through the Positive Community. There are not a lot of other media where they can reach their potential customers and their current customers in any kind of an environment that is supportive, that is positive.
And, you know, I'll tell you, Wayne, when we first started, I mean, the magazine, when we hit that bump back in 2007, one of the things that we did do, because for 7 years we were distributing the magazines to the churches
for free
through advertiser support. But we did, in 2008, begin to ask our advertisers to contribute $1 a copy.
The churches
to contribute $1 a copy for bulk delivery. And if you turn to page 7 in any magazine, you can go online to www.thepositivecommunity.com, and you can turn the pages. And if you see page 7, you'll see what we call the Positive Community's Great Roll Call to Progress. And you'll see the listing of churches. It's just actually a partial listing that are paying for delivery of the magazine to their churches every month. So just like as we did in our years at WLIB, we, with the family card, you know, we've been able to create a very mutually beneficial relationship between the consumer, the business, and the media product. And so
I was just going to say, I think that both of you have done an extraordinary job and should be commended for it, because it's not easy. I mean, particularly today when you see a lot of these publications going south. I just heard about the Wall Street Journal radio operation going dark in the next couple of months. You know, it's like people are striving for information, but they're far few sources, and of course your market is niche, but even in spite of that, doesn't mean that you're not immune to some of the economic burdens that everyone else out here is shouldering.
Well, you know, and I think that it's important that we realize that here we are in 2000 at the end of 2014 and the beginning of 2015, that, you know, the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area has the highest concentration of black folks on the North American continent. But we do find ourselves today where we don't own any radio stations, we don't own any TV stations, we don't own a major internet site. Our newspapers are really taking a beating, and our magazines on a national basis, you know, are hurting. And so we need to understand that there are certain things that you have to have. You have to have a community that communicates to itself. And Kay and Wayne, no one can know better than you two about what we were doing at WLIB and the power that had in our community. And that has not been replicated since.
You know, it's sad, but you're absolutely right. It hasn't.
But, my dear friend, the important thing is at this point is we got to look at it from a half-glass-filled perspective. There's always tomorrow, and there's always another way. And what we have to do and what Gene and I are committed to doing is finding that other way. And so we're just fortunate we can't consider ourselves lucky, because we've been working together for 34 years, and so we're just coming into our time with this. So we thank you so much for all of your support over the years, and just the love you've shown to us.
Mm-hmm. Listen, you know, before we hang up, now, are there still tickets available or places available for your affair on the 17th, down at New Jersey Performing Arts Center?
No, Kay, let me just say this to you. This is a invitation-only event because, you know, this is our maiden voyage, so we just can't open up the floodgates. And so, but at the same time, we hope to do it next year and the year after and moving forward. We're just really looking forward to opening this up, and where we can celebrate our own achievements on our own terms.
And because it's an invitation, well, maybe not only because it's an invitation only, but if we were sold out, we would be sold out. But right now we're, you know, so there's
right
no.
Right now we're hovering at capacity.
Yes.
It's expensive, but we're fortunate to have corporations in our community like Prudential Financial, like Panasonic, United Airlines, Verizon, that are helping to bring this together. So we call them our corporate our advertisers, we call them community partners because they're also stakeholders in the progress of our community. So the idea is how do we move ourselves forward? And part of what Gene and I have focused on over the years, particularly in the last 3 years, when after the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, is we've taken on a campaign to focus on cultural literacy. We believe in the progress of our children and the integrity of our culture as the,
as the what?
As the earmark or the foundation of progress.
And you said cultural, say that again, cultural what?
Literacy.
Cultural literacy, which means being literate in our culture and the contributions of our people and the dynamics of our culture, I assume, correct?
To Eric, that the idea is that people, hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Under formal education, our young people need to have a cultural orientation, who they are, whose they are, community pride, and some knowledge of their own history. This doesn't necessarily have to come from the school, but it has to come from our families. It has to come from our institutions. Culture is something that you feel. So when I say cultural literacy, I talk about being able to read, write, speak the English language, and to comprehend the English language, but also being conversant on relative history.
You know, Adrian and Gene, the thing too that you have to mention to people that your magazine is a faith-based magazine.
It's a faith-based lifestyle magazine. In
right.
other words,
okay,
people who go to church purchase cars, they buy homes, they send their children to school, and they take vacations, and many other things. That the difference with what we do at the magazine is that who are blessed, people are blessed to make these kinds of purchases. People are blessed to take care of their kids and send them to a good school and good education. They're blessed to be able to take a vacation, blessed to be able to purchase a car. It's a blessing.
Yeah.
And so what we have to do is we have to kind of keep bringing people forward. Kind of bring people forward. There's hope and opportunity is the benchmark and where we ground ourselves. We're a culturally and spiritually grounded monthly publication, and we are in our 15th year of publishing.
Congratulations.
That's fantastic, and I do like the term cultural identity. And,
cultural
and
literacy.
Cultural literacy. I'm sorry. I like that phrase. I got to learn it first before I can say I like it. But I agree wholeheartedly that needs to happen within our community, certainly within the young people, to understand the not only do they get their A's and B's and their reading and their writing and arithmetic, but also to understand where they come from and the cultural contributions that we gave. I don't need to blow the horn of someone else that I'm related to, but my father wrote the Amistad legislation
right.
When he was former Assemblyman William Payne, to include in the curriculum that African American history will be taught throughout the year, not just during those short 28 days that we have in
That's
February.
Right. That's
and,
right.
You know,
and, you know, Kay, you know, I was talking, my last meeting with our friend who just departed, Clem Price, we were in a meeting talking about this subject, cultural literacy, and, you know, we've done over the years a roundtable series where we've talked about health, we've had roundtables on health, business, and education, and we were planning in April of next year for our next roundtable to be about the role of the Sunday school in the child's education.
Good.
That can help combat some of the miseducation.
Because you can't, you know, and I'm very familiar with the Amistad, but obviously one of the difficult things is that people who are not familiar with our culture are not as interested. And exactly. we have to nurture a hunger and a thirst, a hunger for knowledge and truth, and a thirst for righteousness in our young people. And again, if we were to see all of the blessings that have been bestowed upon the African American people in this country, we would do a lot more. So
I have to agree with you, Adrian. I really think it's very important. I mean, unfortunately, I see more of the decadence out here than I see, you know, people who are trying to uphold and uplift and embrace our culture. There's so many forces that have been working against us, and particularly the media at large, you know, of which we are a part of. But obviously, we're progressive in our thinking and what it is that you're trying to portray. But I had a chance after leaving inner city to do some teaching in the what I refer to the bowels of the South Bronx, and I am thoroughly disturbed to this day about some of the things that I witnessed in the classroom, you know. And and you know, our kids need cultural enrichment, you know. They need this. They need to hear this. They need to see this. They need to see what we've been a part of. And
well, I think that one of the things, that the one of the blessings that being at WLIB, I'm an African American. Both my parents are from North Carolina. But I had an opportunity to spend time with my Caribbean and African brothers and sisters. So I got an understanding of what culture really is. I think that, you know, the African American people by and large certainly need to have come to an understanding of the value of how rich their culture is. But they got to understand it. I mean, it's one thing if you're sitting in Jamaica, you know, of course you're not as sensitive to Jamaican culture as you would be if you were sitting in Brooklyn, you know. So, but that's the issue that we have here. We are, you know, we take it for granted that this is something that, you know, that takes on its own life when it's not. It has to be taught, and it has to be celebrated.
Exactly. I agree, and the thing is that black folk in this country dictate American culture. Anything that has been popularized in American, white American culture today, the origin of that, I still maintain, comes out of our community. And the thing is that we have to learn how to harness this. We have to know how to promote it. We need more people like you, Gene, Clem Price, all those that have gone on to a certain level of greatness, so it can be sustained. Because, you know, I just fear what happens after this. What happens
are those people, though, all over the place? And the problem is that they don't get the exposure. We don't know about them.
And that's why
You know, there are those people for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know them and I know them well in our families. You know, I know what we do in our family. We have every year, we have a Black History Month event in our family, and the kids have to get up and perform and recite poetry, and, you know, and we even have some of the Caucasian members of our family get up and talk about Black history because they're in the family. So, you know,
it's all over us,
but it doesn't get the exposure, and that is one of the reasons that we started the magazine, is so that we can expose the fact, again, like I said earlier, that there are people who are living everyday lives, struggling, trying to do the things that they know our ancestors would have us do, and we want people to know that we're here.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And, you know, and Wayne, one thing that Gene and I figured out philosophically, Kay, and as you know, too, that when it all boils down, it's not about black and white. It's not about rich or poor. It's not even about educated or uneducated or male and female. This struggle today, right now, that we're confronted with is about two things, positive and negative. There are positive black people. There are positive white people. There are negative white people. There are negative black people. So, and you can go on, but it's all about positive and negative. We, as a positive community, are going to shine the light of progress on our people. That's our commitment. So there is a, you know, there's a philosophical drive here that's beyond just making money. You know, obviously we're in business to prosper, but my prospering doesn't have to be at the expense of you. You know, so I don't have to win for you to be a loser. And I think that we have to evolve out of that kind of mindset because, as we can see, we're not winning.
Okay. Right. Listen, you two. We'll see you on the 17th, and I'll call you back sometime tonight or tomorrow. Thanks for coming on with all that kind of information. Also, I wanted to say, too, that when we were on WLIV, I made it my business to present a lot of Black history, you know, how can I say, giants, like Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, Dr. Van Sertimer, Dr., you know, Gunther, so many people. And we were able to do, you know, courses in African-American history on WLIV. And I'm so glad.
God bless you, Kay. You know, we came out to Newark together at that building on Two Park Place. And, you know, again, I thought that was, you know, a blessing because that's when I really got to know Gus. And, you know, I just can't thank you enough. Just for, at a time where I needed encouragement, you were there to encourage us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Listen, talk to you later. Glad you came
okay.
on. I know it's going to be a successful affair. We will be there. Okay?
Okay.
Adrian Temple, Gene Nash Wells of Positive Community Magazine. I want to thank you once again and for all the great work that you've been doing. You guys have been putting it in. For shining that light on our community, because that's what we absolutely, if we don't do it, who will?
Yeah.
So,
amen. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Congratulations to both of you.
Thank
you.
Absolutely. Good night.
Good
night.
Okay.
Good night. Wayne Gilman, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
That was certainly an inspiring
conversation. I tell you, it's like old home week. Yeah, but it is very inspiring. You know, so much of what, you know, Gene and Adrian said just rings home. I mean, you know, it's funny when Gene was talking about her family embracing the whole concept of educating, you know, those who are within to know something about their history and their culture. I don't think not enough families engage in that practice. And if it is, I know lately it's become somewhat fashionable to look into Ancestry.com and all that business, but, you know, I just really feel the only way you're going to know what your present and future is going to be like is predicated on what you've come through in the past. And, you know, it's just important to know, you know. And I remember some of my last conversations with my dad earlier this year before he passed was about his history and what he went through and with his father, you know, trying to raise a family of seven mulatto sons and not being accepted in this country, having to go back to a country where he, being a white man, accepted by a Black government, you know, there quicker than you come here and you're facing issues like Jim Crow and you know, just the decadence that went on during just before the Civil Rights Movement hit.
Yeah.
And it's just unfortunate, but this is how life is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the United States is, come to the United States, that's when you run into the professional racists.
Yeah.
They don't
You're
just
right.
do it as a job, they love it too. So, you know,
exactly.
You know, they go all in with it. And, you know, after we elected the first African-American president, I must admit that people were trying to start talking about a post-racial society. I was like, wow, what's our identity now? Our struggle seems to have been lifted. And true to form, those people didn't let us down to let us know, oh, no, darky. Just because you got a president doesn't mean you're winning. So, you know, and I think in a certain respect, maybe that was good for them to be able to come out, so those of them that haven't been up front with their racism to be really put on Front Street like that, because, you know, it's good to know where those people are. They're right out front where you can see them, and I prefer that more than the people who act like they're not but really are, you know?
Right, right. Well, there's something to be said about that. I mean, I'd rather know, at least to a certain extent, if you know who your enemy is, you know, you could deal with everything else. But, you know, it's just disgusting that we're still discussing these issues at this time in our lives, you know.
Yeah, Wayne, we just had a few more minutes, but I want to ask you something. What is the feeling about de Blasio there, you know?
In terms of his running the city?
Yeah.
I think he's doing the best he can given the circumstances. You know, this is New York is an interesting animal, and we're dealing with a dynamic here where, you know, this is an integrated couple. They're coming together. He was lucky enough to win the election and get the lion's share of support of the New York voting populace. But a lot of people are not in lockstep with all the changes, particularly those people of means who did well under Bloomberg.
Yeah.
They're not really happy about some of the changes that have been going on, but these changes have been long overdue. You know, a settlement in the Central Park case is one.
Yeah.
You know, getting rid of stop and frisk is another. You know, we can go on and on about the things that needed to be changed here. And to improve the quality of life for everybody, not just people who can afford to live on the Upper East Side or now in Central Brooklyn. You know, I would never think 30, 40 years ago, a place that we referred to as the ghetto has now become gentrified, and you can't afford to even live there, you know. So it's just one of those things.
What about the relationship between de Blasio and what's his name? Bratton.
Well, that's his handpicked guy to run the police department. Bratton has come under a lot of criticism of late because of the handling of the highest-ranking black who was in the police department decided not to take on a job that would have put him in a more managerial position. But and I still don't know quite what all the uproar was about with that. You know, they felt that to a certain extent, the guy, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but whoever was to inherit that position felt that it was going to be a step down and a step away from really doing kind of the things that he should have been doing, even if he were appointed as police commissioner. And, you know, it's still, you have those little subtleties that go on. And, you know, it's kind of hard to gauge. I mean, what's happening in there unless you're close to the scene. But I applaud Bratton for at least weathering the storm so far. He was very adamant about the stop and frisk thing ending, and I think it's become a good thing for people in this community. But, you know, as Adrian just pointed out, we have good apples and we have bad ones. And it's just unfortunate that when the bad ones erupt, we always seem to be in the midst of a crisis, and we have to learn how to educate our own to step away from that kind of behavior, you know? And when will that happen? I don't know. But that's something that stemmed from the days of slavery, that we're still in that culture to a certain extent, you know? It's unfortunate.
Yeah, you're very right about that, Wayne, unfortunately. We're coming up towards, we're just about out of time. We had a great, great discussion this evening with Adrian Council and Gene Nashwell, the Positive Magazine. We want to tell everybody to support Positive Community Magazine when you get out and about in the world. We also want to say go to Vonda's restaurant, or it's Duke's Supper Club. It's a great new spot that Vonda McPherson has. Wayne, we want to say thank you once again for being a fantastic co-host that you are, sir.
I appreciate being here, and I certainly need the work. And hopefully next week, now that I know that you guys are stable, I'll try to see if I can get out to, your area of the woods.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be absolutely great. Yeah. Thanks once again, the legendary Wayne Gilman.
Thank you.
On the K Thompson Live Show, my name is Eric Payne, the son.
And I'm K Thompson.
Have a good night.
K Thompson, don't want to keep talking, y'all. We got a little extra time left over, even though the music is playing. I want to thank you once again, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, you can listen to this show at blogtalkradio.com/KTompsAndLive every night at 8 p.m. I mean, every Wednesday at 8 p.m. live. Or you can listen to the show's archive. All right? Thanks once again. Have a great evening and a great week.